Pirate Nation. Purple and gold family. Stand to your feet. Put your crossbones up and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Come on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, welcome to the island, man, it's crazy in here. A whole sea of purple and gold waving in here. Keep a plank or the shark tank, traders beware, because we got a whole bunch of body sailors in here.
What is going on, Pirate Nation? Welcome into the Sports Objective, the Pirate Preview. And the Pirates will be taking on the South Florida Bulls as they return to Williams Arena Minji's Coliseum, a Sunday matinee, 1 o'clock tip-off. So you can get your tickets at ecupirates.com or by calling 1-800-ECU. Today, to preview this matchup, very excited to welcome back to the show the play-by-play voice of the USF Bulls, Jim Lighthall. Jim, we appreciate your time this afternoon.
Always a pleasure, Bubba. Thank you guys for having me again.
Yes, sir. As you take a look at this matchup, two teams that are in desperate need of a win on the Pirates have lost three straight, 10-8 overall, 1-4 in the American. South Florida, 7-10, 0-4. However, I know Brian Gregory's ball club has actually been playing some pretty good basketball.
Yeah, very good basketball. Don't have a lot to show for it right now. After an 0-5 start in the non-conference, all close losses, they won 7 of 8, got to conference play, went to Memphis and lost a close game there, had a big lead in the second half, then back-to-back four-point losses at home to Temple and Wichita State, had second-half leads in both of those games, and then went to number one Houston this week and had the lead in the second half there, played maybe their best game all season. The problem was it was coming against the number one team in the country and ended up losing that one by 6. Again, had the lead late and scored more points against Houston than anyone did all year, shot a higher percentage against Houston than anyone did all year, but again, didn't have anything to show for it at the end of the night.
Yeah, as I look down the schedule for the Bulls, of course, the 0-5 start jumped out, but then you won 7 out of the next 8. And as I mentioned, even during the current 4-game skid, playing very good basketball. I know Tyler Harris, the Memphis transfer, a familiar name to East Carolina fans, obviously, from his days with the Memphis Tigers. And then he also spent his season as an Iowa State Cyclone. But talk about what he's brought to the table, because I know he's averaging in excess of 16 points and had a career high 31 against number one Houston.
Yeah, Tyler's been a great addition to this basketball team. We really needed a point guard, a veteran guy, somebody that could score, someone that could create a shot, somebody that could make a three-point shot, because the Bulls were dead last in the country last season in three-point shooting. So let me go back real quick to the non-conference, and we played in Daytona against UAB, who I'm thoroughly impressed with. I think they're definitely a team that's going to play into the second weekend in the NCAA tournament. Jelly Walker has been leading the nation in scoring. But we go back to that game. We were 0-4, lost to UAB by 15. But at that point, I thought the Bulls had played their best game of the season. And I thought Tyler Harris, elevated his game. I think he started 0-15 or 0-16, 0-17 from three this season, and he had never had a stretch worse than maybe 0-8. So he really struggled when he first started. I think it was just one of those deals where he knew what his role was going to be, maybe was pressing a little bit. After that start, and then the Bulls played UAB, he made 4 or 5 threes in that game going against Jelly Walker, one of those deals where he probably felt a little challenged playing against a guy that could potentially be an All-American. And then Tyler has taken off since then. You know, he's been making 5-6 threes in a game. He did go home to Memphis in the first league game and had no points in the first half, had 17 in the second half, but he had a tremendous game against Houston the other night. Shot the ball like 9 of 13 from the floor, 5 of 7 from 3. And, you know, he's 5'9", 150 pounds, and the kid is a total bulldog. He backs down to no one. You know, he's one of those kind of guys, when he's in your arena, you hate his guts. But when he's in your arena and he plays for your team, you love him to death.
And something else, looking at USF's leaders, in addition to Tyler Harris, Russell Tuchua, 7 feet, 280 pounds. He had 14-8 against Houston. Prior to that, he'd gone 19-10, 20-12, so just a couple rebounds shy of 3 consecutive double-doubles. He's second on the team in scoring, 11.3 points per game, and leads the team with 7.9 rebounds. tell us about him and what he brings.
So Russell's quite a unique story this season. He went home to the Cameroon. He's a Texas Tech transfer, originally from Cameroon. Went home to the Cameroon, as he's done for many summers before this. And then his paperwork got messed up or lost or something had happened, and we couldn't get him back in the country. He was over there for a solid 3 months. The USF folks were calling their legislators, trying everything to try and get him back into the country. No one seemed to have a good reason other than his paperwork wasn't ready. Again, he had done this in multiple summers and never had any issue. He had not really been flagged for anything and this was the U.S. government that wasn't letting him in. It wasn't a Cameroon deal. It was U.S. government. So he hadn't really been flagged for anything. It was just, hey, your paperwork is being processed. We'll get to it when we can get to it. So a couple different things along those lines. Here's a guy who's 7 feet tall, 280 pounds. He's in the Cameroon with his family, and they're living in a small little house. He's got all brothers and sisters and relatives. This guy's got to eat. This guy has to work out. This guy has to play basketball, and he can't do any of those things in his hometown in the Cameroon. And really, his parents were even saying, can we get him out of the house? We can't feed this guy. He's eating everything we own. And so it was really becoming a problem for everyone, becoming a problem for USF because they didn't have him, a problem for Russ because he couldn't do the work he needed to do in the offseason, and then a problem for his family. So eventually the Bulls got in touch with a legislator who got in touch with someone with the immigration department, and they finally found his paperwork. It was just one of these deals where it got buried. Nobody could find it. He was at the bottom of the stack, and then they pulled the paper out and went, oh, this should have been rubber stamped. This is a no-brainer. So they finally got him back in the country, and this was, right before the season, maybe 3-4 weeks before the season started, he finally came back. So I give you all that backstory because of this. He's been playing great over the last month. And Brian Gregory has told us publicly and privately, this is what he would have been doing at the start of the season had he had the offseason to prepare. He needed the extra couple months to get back to where he was going to be, and now he's taken off. I don't know how he didn't get at least on the honor roll in the American Conference last week with back-to-back double-doubles at almost 20 points apiece. But he played very well against Houston. Defensively, he's good. Offensively, he gets better, it seems like, every single game. And when he has touches on the interior, the entire offense for USF takes off.
Yeah, Jim, that was one thing I was going to ask you about. It's one thing you have a nice 1-2 punch with Harrison and Tuchua there. But it's another thing to have a 1-2 punch where you got a big man on the inside and a guard on the outside. Maybe talk about a little bit of some of the actions and some of the plays or some of the sets or whatever that Brian Gregory tries to use to utilize those two as an inside-outside 1-2 punch.
Yeah, that's a great question, TJ. And what Brian Gregory likes is he's old school. He comes from the Tom Izzo coaching tree. He likes to have a low post presence that can score. I know we're getting away from that in all levels of basketball, high school, college, and pro. He knows that too. But when you have a guy that can do something down low, you have to utilize him. So they park him down on the block. He will come out at times to the high post and catch a pass, and they'll run stuff off of him. He's shown over the last couple of games that he's also capable of putting the ball on the floor and going to the basket. So sometimes those bigs on defense will relax when he's out on the high post, just thinking he's going to hand the ball off, and then boom, he spins and he goes to the basket. But what Brian Gregory wants to do is he wants to play inside out. He wants to get the ball to Russell Chua down low, get him a touch. That's going to do one of two things. If you're going to leave him alone and go one-on-one with your big, he's too big, he's too strong, he's too skilled with both hands, or you collapse your defense and now you kick it out, and that gives Tyler Harris an opportunity to make threes.
Yeah, so he's a back to the 90s kind of coaching offensive style, right?
Yeah, exactly. All those great big men from the 80s and 90s, he would fit in well. He's just in the wrong decade.
Wrong decade, yeah.
Yeah, Jim, we appreciate you sharing that backstory because I had not heard about that. I'm glad that things worked out as smoothly as they did after the issues there. I'm glad he is able to play the basketball that he's playing for you guys. And hopefully the Pirates will be able to find a way from our standpoint to minimize the damage, because we are thin, as TJ can attest, on the interior. And Ezra Assar, very talented East Carolina freshman, very athletic, but can get himself into foul trouble, which is one of the reasons he's only playing 19 minutes per game.
Yeah, that's been a problem for a lot of teams that we face. And again, as I say, the direction that college basketball is going into, teams want guys that can shoot. They want their fours and fives to be able to step out and shoot. And if you put guys that are 6'8", you know, 220 against Russell Chiwa, it's going to be a long night because he just wants to back you down to the basket and score that way. He did it to Houston the other night, and they rotated three different guys on him, and two of the three had four fouls, and the other guy had three. They just couldn't handle him at 280 pounds, and he is a solid 280.
Go ahead, TJ.
Excuse me, but I was also looking at the roster, and there's three or four players, I think about six deep, that average over 8 points a game. Besides, we talked about Tachua and Harris here, but of those other four players, who is that X factor that you think, you know, has that spark to really can come in to a game in Minji's and get 16 or 18 and you know, be that X factor and somebody that we're going to have to watch out for?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple different names, and they were both brought in this year out of the transfer portal. One guy is a senior that came from South Carolina by the name of Keyshawn Bryant. He played 4 years under Frank Martin. Of course, Frank Martin got let go, so he was looking for a new home. He grew up about a half hour, an hour from Tampa, so it was logical for him to come back to the Tampa Bay area and play. Bryant is about 6'6". He's a lefty, and he can leap out of the gym. He's already been on SportsCenter a couple times this season for top tens with windmill dunks. I mean, there's no dunk that the kid can't do. First game of the season, he had 19. Then he had 10 in the second game, and then he kind of got hurt. He was a little nicked up and missed a few games. He's now, I think he missed about six or seven games, and since then he started to come back, and he's had a couple back-to-back point games. He can elevate, shoot the three. He's kind of a pogo stick jumper, doesn't have to stay on his feet very long, just comes down on the balls of his feet right back up again, so he can block shots, and he loves to finish in transition. I'll tell you what, he wants to take the rim home with him every night, which is, I love that mentality. It doesn't matter who's in front of him, he'll try to dunk over him. So that's a guy, and he's played 110 basketball games in his career. And then the other guy is Selton Miguel, who's a transfer from Kansas State. Was kind of a defensive guy there. He's about 6'4", put together pretty well, solid 210, 215-pound guy. They really relied on him defensively because he wasn't a big scorer. He averaged maybe 6 or 7 points a game. I think his career high was around 18 or 19. Well, he's come here, and he's really found two things. Number one, his shot, and number two, his confidence. Because at Kansas State, he was never a go-to guy. He was a third or fourth option. Here, and he's kind of been in and out of the starting lineup because he got a little sick and a little nicked up. They took him out of the starting lineup and brought him off the bench, and he had a couple 20-point games doing that. But he's found his three-point shot, which he, I think in the Big 12 last year, he went 1-for-18 from three, and now he's come here, and he's found his shooting touch, and he's provided some outside pop. But he's another guy that will lower his shoulder and go right through people, and he tries to get to the rim. So those two guys have really given them some offensive punch. Again, Bryant's a senior, and Selton Miguel is just a sophomore. And then I think if you throw in the true freshman, Ryan Conwell, who's from Indianapolis, who committed very early to USF last year, and everybody I've talked to around the recruiting circle said if he had not committed early, there would have been a bidding war for him because his senior season was tremendous. Like, he ended up on the Indiana-Kentucky All-Star game. He was an all-state player. He's built. He looks like a running back or an inside linebacker at 6'3", 215, and another kid that's not afraid to bang with anybody. So he's come in and been able to start some games at times. He comes off the bench at times. Miguel and Conwell will run the point when needed, when Tyler Harris needs a break. They're very good interchangeable parts, and I think those three guys have been the key ingredients.
Last time out for East Carolina, the Pirates' most lopsided loss of the season at Cincinnati, falling by 28, 83 to 55 to the Bearcats. In that one, the Pirates were out rebounding 44 to 27. On the whole, the Pirates have really rebounded the ball fairly well at times this year. But you know, tell us about how are the Bulls on the glass outside of Russell?
Yeah, they're very good. they out-rebounded Houston, which not a lot of people do. They have done a very good job on the glass here in the second half of the season. I think they kind of were still feeling themselves out with some of these new additions in the first half, and Brian Gregory is a guy that really prides himself on defense and rebounding because, again, the Michigan State Tom Izzo philosophy, the rebounding is a huge deal. In American Conference play coming into the Houston game the other night, they were averaging 16 offensive rebounds a game, which is very impressive. You can win yourself some games doing that. Another guy that's really provided a spark on the glass, I think, is Jameer Chaplin, who's played more games in a USF uniform than anybody on the roster. He's up around 80. He's been with us since he was a true freshman, but he's a sneaky good rebounder. He can really jump. He likes to go to the offensive glass, and he gets a lot of putbacks that way. Bryant will get some rebounds. The guards are always willing to rebound. So I think as a whole, this team is a very good rebounding team, and a lot of times it determines whether or not they win or they lose.
Taking a look around the American, we're about a third of the way through the league play. You know, Pirates having played, this will be their sixth game, USF's fifth. Obviously, Kelvin Sampson in Houston, number one in the country, 17-1. But then you have Tulane, UCF, and then Temple. They're right there behind the Cougs, 4-1. Tulane had a little bit of a struggle in non-conference play, and probably more so than many people would have expected. But them, the Knights and Owls have been playing pretty good basketball. What are your thoughts on the way the league race is shaping up?
Yeah, I really think it's Houston and then everybody else, and that's no disrespect to Tulane or UCF or Memphis, but you know, having seen Memphis a lot on TV this year, and then we just played them this week, they are just so tough. They just have tough kids. Marcus Sasser ended up with a career-high 31 against us, and they needed every point from him because they were going to lose otherwise. Shed, the point guard, is another incredibly tough kid. I like the kids that Kelvin Sampson recruits. I don't think he cares much about how many stars they have. He's looking for the proper fit. And he has definitely found the kids. They're going to win him a ton of games. They're obviously going to be a contender for the national championship. We played Memphis. They're incredibly athletic. They're older than they've been in years past. Usually you got a bunch of young five-star kids, four-star kids. They don't have that this year. They're very old. They can turn it up on defense. That's how they beat us. They ratcheted up the defense over the last few minutes and ended up beating us. UCF has been a great surprise, I think. The previous year, they returned like 96 or 97% of their scoring and rebounding. They didn't do a whole lot. This year, they got some new guys, and all of a sudden, they're taking off. They beat Memphis again the other night. And then I had a chance to watch Cincinnati a couple days ago when they played Houston, and you know, they stayed within around 10 or 12 with them. I got to see Tulane on TV the other day against Memphis. And, you know, I know they were really busted up there in the non-conference. He had a lot of guys out. Ron Hunter's a great coach. I love Ron Hunter. He just wins wherever he goes. But now that everybody's healthy, I think they're going to start to take off. You know, and then I think the rest of the league is just really a great big jumbled mess. I think anybody can beat anyone on any given night. But here's the thing, is that you better win your home games because it's so difficult to win on the road in this league that you better get the wins when you can, and that usually means at home.
Yeah, that was something that the Pirates let a couple of games slip against Temple and UCF where we did a good job of getting to the free throw line, but we didn't convert once we got there and lost to the Owls by two and then UCF by three.
I've been there. We don't shoot free throws very well either, so it's very frustrating when you're in a tight game and you're at home and you don't make free throws in those empty possessions. All it takes is a couple empty possessions, and next thing you know, you're going home with a loss.
Jim, as always, we appreciate your time this afternoon, but before we wrap things up, one other thing. I know your focus is obviously men's basketball, but football coaching change there in Tampa, what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Alex Golish, the new football coach, was the offensive coordinator at Tennessee. And obviously everyone knows what Tennessee did this season, maybe the best offense in all of college football. So I thought USF had a really difficult decision to make. Michael Kelly, the vice president of athletics, could go a lot of different ways with this hire. And they were in on Deion Sanders. Everyone here wanted Deion Sanders. It was just a whether or not Deion wanted to come to USF or whether or not he wanted to go to the Pac-12 in Colorado. And obviously he chose Colorado. But I thought Michael Kelly had a very difficult decision, because when you start to look at the few coaches that USF has hired through the years, they've run all the different gauntlets. I mean, they've gone with an established guy before with someone like Charlie Strong, and that didn't work. They tried Skip Holtz, who was at East Carolina and won some conference championships there. That did not work. They did try Willie Taggart, who had success at Western Kentucky, and he did fantastic here. And, of course, Jim Leavitt was their first ever coach, and he was a defensive coordinator at Kansas State. Jeff Scott was an offensive coordinator at Clemson. So you're bringing in an offensive guy from an elite program, and that didn't work. You don't know. You never know. You know who's going to work. I mean, I think a lot of people laughed at Tulane when they hired Willie Fritz. But here's the thing about Willie Fritz. That guy's won every single place he's been, and he's adapted as well, because when he got to Tulane, he brought with him an option attack, and then that evolved into what they are today, which is a really good football program. So Alex Golish is a guy that wants to go wide open. He wants to score. I'm all for that. I don't like to go to football games that end 17-14. If you're going to lose, give me 47-45, and at least the people that paid their hard-earned dollars to get in the stadium are going to be entertained. But this guy has really worked hard already on the recruiting trail. He's hit the transfer portal very hard. And here's the advantage that this football program has over a lot of different places, is that there's a lot of kids in the Tampa Bay area that go on to play Division I football, and they go on to play at high levels. And not all those guys pan out. So a lot of times they come back home, and that's how USF was really built. When they were a 1AA program, they took a lot of Division I transfers that came back home from, you know, elite programs, and then they got really good really fast. So if he can turn some of those kids into stars here, look, there's no place to go but up for USF football, because it has been really a rough last 3 years.
Hey, Jim, I've got one more question for you. I don't know how many times you've been to Greenville, but Coach Larry Dixon was on Coach McCarthy's staff back when I was a high school coach in the area. But he actually recruited, and they offered one of my kids that played for me. So how much do you lean on Coach Dixon when you come back to Greenville to give a lay of the land and where to eat and what to do and all those types of things?
Well, it's funny because we always joke that everybody wants to go to Hooters because it's usually right across the street from our hotel and for other reasons. But we do lean on Larry. He talks very fondly about his days at East Carolina. And I love to get to the arena a little bit early when we go to East Carolina, because he's working the room. He kind of goes around and talks to everybody that he knows there. And Billy Hubley, who is our guy in charge of video, was also on the East Carolina staff for a long time. And he talks about all the fond times that he had there. And he usually gives us some hints as to where we can go if we have a few extra hours there. So those guys talk very, very well about East Carolina, the Greenville community as well. What a tight-knit group that is, and what a tight-knit community. I love coming to Greenville. We play great games against you guys. They're always close. They're always down to the wire. They're entertaining. And as a broadcaster, that's all I ask for, really.
That's right.
Another name on this USF staff that I was just looking at, and as I was scrolling through the information prior to the interview, and I know you'll recognize this name, TJ, James Madison.
Lewis Rowe.
Lou Rowe.
Lou Rowe.
Yeah. Yeah, Lou Rowe came on last year. He was a head coach at one time, yes. He's a Tampa Bay area guy, so he's come back home. And, you know, once these guys leave and come back, they realize, wow, you know, I don't ever want to leave again. Because once you get your toes back in the sand, you don't want to leave. But he's been very happy. And, man, he's a wealth of knowledge. Great college career. Played a lot of pro basketball as well. And the players have really leaned on him because, look, they want to get to the next level as well. They want to go make money, whether that's in the NBA or if it's overseas. And Lou Rowe has done all that before.
Yeah, the last time we were in the NCAA tournament was the 1992-93 season, which we're at 30 years now, which is just blows my mind to think about that it's been 30 years. But Lou Rowe and some of those James Madison's teams, that's who we ended up beating in the CAA championship to win our berth. And he was a part of some really good teams, for sure.
Yeah, he was a Florida guy who transferred to James Madison. And, yep. So we love Lou. He's a great guy to hang around.
Now, one of those early round upsets that JMU pulled in the big dance, wasn't it? Didn't they beat the Gators? Maybe I want to, or I can't remember. Maybe,
I can't remember.
That was 94, 95. I think it was, they went the year after, I believe, from the CAA. Yeah.
Couldn't remember. It was one of those things. Knowledge was running together there, but maybe he had, I knew there was some tie to the University of Florida there, but anyway,
it's been 30 years, so we forgive you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, appreciate the time, Jim, and you know, tell folks. You know, sometimes, you know, Pirate fans may like to hear the opposing side and description of things. How can folks hear you?
Well, so we've kind of gone on streaming, and we go on an HD2 channel now as well. So really the best way to listen to us is to go on the TuneIn app and click on Bulls Unlimited. It's a 24/7 channel that we have for USF Athletics. We stream the men's basketball games on there, the women's basketball games. And it's been we were a little leery about it at first, but the way terrestrial radio has kind of gone, it's kind of been dying off a little bit. So we switched to the streaming, and at first the non-tech people were a little upset with us, but it took them about a year, and then they realized, wow, I can hear this anywhere I go in the world, and it's crystal clear, and now they love it. So the TuneIn app is an app that you can put on your phone, obviously, and just find Bulls Unlimited, click on us, and we'll be there. It'll be nice and crystal clear. It's been a nice marriage for us, really.
Now, you mentioned in the streaming, you know, by the nature of your job, you know, with the ESPN Plus broadcast, that streaming side of things, you know, how readily available are those numbers? And I just thought of that question because that's something that Kyle Barber and I, one of our co-hosts here on the program, have talked about because of East Carolina's you know, fan base, especially in football and baseball, tuning in via ESPN Plus.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know too much about the TV side, how that's doing. I know on our streaming numbers on the basketball, it's gotten better every year. And really the main reason for that was when we first started with Bulls Unlimited, which was about 6 years ago, we were doing Bulls Unlimited and we were on regular radio. There were a lot of people that didn't have unlimited data on their phone. Like, I was a perfect example. Here I got two kids and a wife, and we're sharing, you know, 10 or 15 gigs, and we're burning through that in no time. And then we're up to 30 gigs and we're burning through that. And finally we had to go unlimited. But I had a lot of people saying, I don't have that kind of data to just listen to the game the whole night, so I can't listen to it very much. Well, now, you know, the unlimited data is kind of a staple for most people. So I think that's one of the reasons why our listenership has gone up more and more on the streaming side.
Yeah. And that's definitely been awesome that we've progressed to that point, because like TJ said, I remember, you know, back when I was, you know, middle school and I guess maybe even early high school, I mean, you didn't really have an option to watch a game outside of one or two a year, and you were reading recaps in the newspaper.
Yeah, and we don't even hardly have newspapers anymore.
Exactly. God bless technology, right? But appreciate you as always, Jim, and I know we'll be catching up soon.
Yeah, sounds good. I appreciate it, guys. Always a pleasure.
Yep, good talking to you.
Really appreciate the visit there from Jim Lighthall, the play-by-play voice of the South Florida Bulls. And for anyone who's tuned in, obviously TJ Long, East Carolina basketball alum, is alongside, as you see there on the screen. TJ, we haven't talked to you in a while. I think this is the first time we've talked to you this season, actually. So, you know, through the first half of the season, what are your thoughts on what you've seen out of Mike Schwartz and the Pirates?
They play hard. That's the one takeaway I've been able to, been really proud of watching them play, is how hard they play, how they play defense. You know, the system that they're running on defense has been really, really impressive, and has given us a chance to be in, you know, most of the games except for the Wilmington game. We didn't play that great.
Old Dominion in the second half.
Yeah, Old Dominion, and then the obviously the Cincinnati. I think at one point they were 11 of 14 shooting threes in the first half, and shot 55 or 60% from the 3-point line. I know Coach Schwartz was not happy with that, but I've been real impressed with how they play defensively, how hard they play, how they work together, how they're in the right places on you know, getting over on screens and working the system that Coach Schwartz has put in place. I've been real impressed with him. I'm impressed with how hard he coaches. He leaves every ounce of it out there, and that's a good thing to see.
Yeah, with so many unproven pieces, even the six guys that returned, you knew to an extent what you were going to get from Brandon Johnson and R.J. Felton. But outside of that, it's been amazing. I know he's had some struggles of late, that being Javon Small, but Javon played much better against Cincinnati, so hopefully that's a sign of things to come for him. But even with some of his recent struggles prior to that game against the Bearcats, he's averaging right at 16 points per game, just shy of 5 rebounds and just over 5.5 assists. So a heck of a sophomore year for Javon Small.
Yeah, and if you think about it, Javon started coming on towards the end of last season. I was fortunate enough to be able to make the trip out to Wichita State, the last regular season game last year. And through foul trouble and some other thing, injuries or whatever, Javon found himself out there on the court pretty early in the game and provided a really nice spark. And I believe that game might have scored 11, 12, 13 points that game. And from coming, you know, a player that comes off the bench and hadn't had a lot of time or just played a few minutes, he responded really well. And so, you know, I think the last couple of games last year, he showed some signs and some glimmer of what he could do. Now, you know, most of the time you don't expect a player to go from, 1.5 points a game to 16 points a game. But I think you could see it a little bit in some of the last couple of games that he played.
Yeah, he did show a few glimpses, as you said, in the last few games of the 21-22 season. And something else we didn't know he had it in his arsenal is, I think back to the first few games of this season, remember, I think he had the ball on the left wing or in the left corner and shot faked and took it baseline and threw one down.
Yeah, really explosive play. And again, from a guy that you haven't seen that much, you know, that much from, it really raises your eyebrows. One of the NFL owners, when we talk about scouting, goes, if a guy can do it one time, he can do it again. So hopefully, you know, that's something that we can see. He adds that into his game with his 3-point shot and the in-between game that he's shown, you know, and then if he gets back to finishing at the rim, he could be a real, real dangerous combination for us.
Early on in that conversation with Jim Lighthall, we referenced Brandon Johnson. I believe it may have been backstage in the green room, but Brandon, 12.5 points, nearly 9 rebounds per game. And right off the bat this year, we saw his improved range. And with the new haircut, you know, I told you, I was like, who in the heck was that? Knocking down a 27 or 28 footer. And then about that time, they said Brandon Johnson, old Patrick Johnson on the ESPN Plus broadcast. But what are your thoughts on BJ?
Yeah, I think he's had a really solid year. Double doubles all over the place. He's rebounded the ball well. He's playing tough on defense. And then this year, he's he's added the 3-point line to his game, and he shoots a nice ball. I've watched it come off of his fingers. Watch his follow through. You know, sometimes you can see some guys can throw it up there, and you know, they can get lucky a little bit. I try to watch the form and see what it looks like. And his form has been good, and the ball has been true coming off of his fingers. So I like his shot, and I think they probably want him shooting a little bit more. You know, Brandon could probably be a little bit more aggressive for us, and he might be being a little too unselfish and go ahead. A lot of times we throw the ball down into the post to go ahead and turn and shoot. Go ahead and make your move, because I think he has a really nice touch around the rim as well.
Yeah, he really does. And a guy who has really impressed as a freshman in many respects, that's Ezra Assar, a Charlotte native. He struggled to shoot free throws, to put it mildly, but man, his quickness and just some of the explosive moves he makes. I remember I had the opportunity to see the South Carolina game in person, and there was a move there in the second half. If you were able to tune in to that one, he about took the rim off.
Yeah, he's an impressive young player. And again, we were talking earlier with Jim about, you know, transfers and portals and how all those things shake out. And certainly he's a freshman that I hope that we can that we can keep and that we can develop, because he has an opportunity to be a really good player here for us at ECU and develop into something really special.
RJ Felton a year ago, we certainly saw more from RJ than we did Javon, but not a ton of scoring from RJ. But this year he's right at 11.5 points per game, the third Pirate in double figures, averaging also about 4.5 rebounds per game. And as we saw, I guess it was at the Minji's Madness, his leaping ability when he jumped over Lucci DeBeau.
Yeah, now he's a specimen. He looks like, you know, I imagine Coach Houston could find somewhere for him over on the football field as well, tackling somebody or going after somebody. He's a good looking kid and a young man, I should say. And he, you know, he does a lot of things. He's a little bit undersized. He can, you know, but he rebounds the ball well. And I think for him, he needs to just relax and take a shot when he gets it. I feel like sometimes for him, he gets a little spun up or maybe a little bit, you know, wants to move quite before he's got the ball and that type of thing. And that he just needs to relax and play, because he's got a lot of tools that could benefit the Pirates going forward.
Yeah, a very streaky shooter. In one game, he'll go 1 out of 5. In the next game, he'll knock down 4 or 5. And in one game this year, he knocked down as many as 7 threes during the month of December. So
RJ's making 3-4 threes in a game, you know, we're going to be a tough team to beat, because we're going to play D, and that's that X factor that you talk about. If he comes in and knocks down 3-4 threes, gets 12 or 14 points, now all of a sudden, if we get the same consistency with Brandon and Javon, now we've got something that we can work with. And so I think that's a, like I said, if RJ will relax, a lot of times play, you know, shooting threes and the crowd and running up and down and being explosive, you have a tendency to, you know, to stop breathing and get a little bit tight and do some things. I think just breathe and relax, and he really has the tools that he can do some good things for us.
Another guy that has really provided something for the Pirates, Iowa State transfer, Jaden Walker. We talked about Tyler Harris spending the year there in Ames, Iowa. Not sure. I guess their time may have overlapped with the Cyclones, but just thought of that connection. But Jaden Walker, really, you saw his absence and what that meant for the Pirates against Cincinnati. He's averaging 6 points, 5 rebounds, and playing, I think, the fourth most minutes on the team, 26.5 per game.
Yeah, and the game before, I believe it was that the Temple game, he came in and did a, you know, really nice job. Gets rebounds, was, you know, playing really good defense, was knocking down some shots, and yeah, his absence was noticed before. And so, yeah, again, I think we've got some really nice pieces. I think Coach Schwartz has done a great job of putting together, bringing in some players, and of course inheriting some players who were here, and has done a nice job of putting those together. You know, we've been in most games, so you know, most of the time it comes down to the shooting and balls rolling around the rim and coming off. We just got to find a way to get the ball in the hole, and you know, if we can do that and shoot a little bit better, the effort, the intensity, the defense will give us a chance to win a lot of games.
Yeah, I really thought that Jaden Walker, even though he hadn't scored very much at all for Iowa State, I liked what he was bringing to the table from a rebound and defending perspective. And you heard Mike Schwartz say a lot about that. And him having games against, I think, Kansas, where he pulled down maybe double-digit rebounds. And that was saying a lot. And he was on a team that went to the Sweet 16.
Yeah. Yeah, so – you know, like I said, I think we've got the parts there. It takes a little bit of time, but I like the way the guys are coming together. And you just got to find a way to you know, to gut it out. But like I said, we've been in games, and you know, the Temple game, where we were 20 of 35 from the free throw line. You know, we can't keep inventing new ways to lose a game. Which, if you think about it, you know, we haven't been that bad on the free throw line all year. And if you just, you know, you make 3 more free throws, and you only shoot 60% from the free throw line, we win that game. And so, yeah, having some consistency there, and you know, having the guys continue to work together and learn the system and those types of things, you know, I think the future can be bright for us.
Yeah, losing those, at least not getting one of them, but the Temple and UCF games, as you mentioned, the Pirates got to the line against the Owls 35 times, but only made 20 in that 2-point loss. And that was one, especially with Temple being without the very talented Damian Dunn, that you hate to let slip. And then obviously UCF, Brandon Suggs, at least scoring wise, he didn't do a whole lot in his return to Minji's, but UCF, Johnny Dawkins Ball Club has some nice pieces.
Yeah, they did. And I watched that a little bit, you know, with Brandon. That had to be, you know, kind of weird. He done a lot. You know, you and I talked about Brandon and through text and other things that we liked a lot of the things that he did. Most of the time you weren't gonna see 25 points on the stat sheet, but you were gonna see rebounds, assists, steals, finishing at the rim, charges, all those types of things that he did a lot for and did a lot for the program. And then, you know, if you transfer within the conference or you transfer to a school that you know, to a rival, you know, you're gonna have to kind of deal with that through the emotions of everything when you come back.
Yeah, I know. I guess it was in the second half of that game. Ezra Saar had the ball just beyond the free throw line and was making a move, and it wasn't much at all. And you can tell Suggs is a veteran and pretty nice acting job, and got the call.
Yeah, man, and that's what you know. Brandon's crafty and does a lot of those things, and like I said, did a lot of nice things for us. So that's tough to watch somebody come back in the Minji's wearing a, you know, UCF jersey.
Shifting gears a little bit, sticking with Pirate basketball, but fast forwarding out 5 or 6 weeks to the end of February, and we're going to have an alumni game. It's not an actual game that the alumni are playing, just to be clear, because I did. It's funny, I sent a message to Errol Bing and making sure that he had received it, and he had not. But Errol was asking that, clarifying. I said, no, it's just to attend the game, Errol. And he said, good. He said, because I need 11 or 12 weeks to get ready.
Yeah, well, at one point in time, we used to do this back when Coach Harrion was here when it first started. It started as an alumni basketball game where we chose sides and played. And, you know, it was ugly, to be honest. Especially, you know, some of the guys still play. They play a lot. I mean, Lester Lyons, I mean, I would think Lester could probably go out and start for us today. I might be giving him a little bit too much credit. He is 50 years old after all. But, you know, he wouldn't be far from it and could still go out there and get some buckets today. And then you've got some other folks who, you know, might be talking to you right now who hasn't done a whole lot of running anytime lately. And so, yeah, you end up hurting all week the next week after the alumni game. So, yeah, we actually did it as alumni game. But, you know, coming in and doing that gets to be a little bit tough. So we just call it the alumni game. And it is February 25th. And, oh, by the way, it's against – the current number one Houston Cougars. So that will be fun. And so we're trying to get the word out about that. We've been talking a little bit with the administration. They've been real open to, you know, trying to reconnect and get some of the Pirates back and doing what they can to invite the former letter winners back to Minji's and make it a, you know, make it a family and make it a brotherhood like it should be.
Absolutely. And, also that weekend, you talk about that game being against the current number one team in the nation with Kelvin Sampson's Houston Cougars. You have Pirates softball that's at home that weekend with a tournament, a multi-team event, as is often the case in that sport early in the season in particular. And then in baseball, that will be game two of the Pirates' three-game series against the University of North Carolina Tar Heels, 2 o'clock for the baseball game, and then 8 o'clock for the basketball game against Houston.
Yeah, that's why we call it G Vegas, right? I mean, a lot of things happening, a lot of things going down, and Big weekend for ECU athletics, and I'm hopeful that there'll be a really nice turnout of letter winners, former basketball players. There'll be a meal in the Harvey Hall for them, and then some on-court recognition down at halftime. So I'm really excited to see some of my former teammates and have a good time.
And I know one of those things with that pregame at Harvey Hall, there's generally a chalk talk on where an assistant coach will come in and provide a bit of a scouting report. Obviously, not much of a scouting report's needed for the Houston Cougars. Obviously, some Pirate fans may not be as familiar with some of the names, but they're well aware of what Kelvin Sampson has going on there in H-Town.
Yeah, that's one of those scouting reports where you go, hey, you know, you need to highlight this or highlight this player or highlight. And next thing you know, you look at your sheet and the whole thing is highlighted. So that's what you get when you get the Houston Cougars. Just the, you know, everybody has a star beside their name. Everybody has an asterisk beside them. And so, yeah, you just got to buckle up and play. But it'll be fun. At one time, we were 10-0 on alumni. I think we got to 10-0 on alumni letter winners game before we lost. But our record on letter winners day, again, I'd have to go back. I started talking about it before I know it off the top of my head. But we haven't lost very many games on letter winners on the letter winners weekend.
Yeah, that's a good point. Pirates generally play pretty well on that weekend, as you said. I'm trying to remember last year who that game was against. I want to say, was it Temple?
Last year they were trying to do some things. There's been some communication and – you know, with everything that was going on, it didn't really get, promoted or there was a lot of things that were happening last year. And then, you know, with COVID, there was a couple of things there. It kind of was still trying to regenerate itself from that. And so, but I do know, like I said, I think at one time we'd only going all the way back to Coach Harry in like 2002 or three, that we had lost, maybe three or four times out of however many years that's been. So it's always exciting to see the guys, and hopefully we can continue to play well on alumni weekend.
And there you see the information on the screen for our viewers and that are tuned in via Facebook and YouTube. And very quickly, I'll read through some of this schedule of events and that TJ has mentioned, but it says, and this is from the ECU Letter Winners Club Men's Basketball Letter Winners event on Saturday, February 25th, 5:30, meet in Williams Arena, the Hall of Fame area to check in. Then from 5:45 to 6:30, you have the Letter Winners Social. 6:30, as TJ mentioned, dinner in Harvey Hall, watch warm-ups in Minji's. 7:00, recognized in Harvey Hall, and then 8:00 to tip off against the Houston Cougars, who we know could very well be number one in the nation, probably at least top five or top 10 coming in that weekend. And it says, more information regarding timing and logistics will be released to those who RSVP by February 20th. I know several had RSVP'd, and then there were some issues with the link. So if you're a basketball lead winner listening to this, I'm sure by now that link has been fixed. So we'll put that on our social media and attempt to get it into all Pirate basketball letter winners' hands. So hopefully your schedule will allow you to attend on February 25th.
Yeah, like I said, we look forward to a great event. And, you know, being that I'm here in Greenville, a lot of times I try to get the word out on those types of things as much as I can. And we actually have a group text of guys that played during the 92-93, a couple of them maybe 91, some overlap there. There's about 17 guys that text every morning. One of our former players sends out a Bible verse or something like that every morning. So there's, you know, 17 of us that communicate daily. And so, yeah, we've had a brotherhood, a long time, a long-standing brotherhood. And so we kind of want to bring the new guys in and kind of share that, because I think that's one thing that's been missing around, you know, with ECU basketball. And of course, you know, the wins have been tough to get at times, but you know, the players and the relationships and all those kinds of things are great memories, and we enjoy being around each other. And course, we have a special bond being this is, like I said, the 30-year anniversary of our NCAA tournament team. And so we've been able to stay in touch and the guys get together and we have a good time together.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. We'd love to do a show specifically for you guys. So I'll certainly get up with you off the air and we'll get yourself and Lester Lyons and Curly Young, some of those 1992-93 guys, Ike Copeland, and we'll reminisce, take a trip down memory lane. And you guys went to Lawrence Joel Coliseum and took on the eventual national champion North Carolina Tar Heels and really gave them all they wanted there with I think about 3 minutes to go in the game. It was a 12-point ball game, and the way Lester Lyons was shooting the ball that night, you felt like, hey, if you get a couple stops, then this thing could really get interesting.
Yeah, we were it was about a 11 or 12-point game at the under 4 minute timeout. For those that might not know, every dead ball after 4 minutes, there's a automatic time a media timeout. And so at the last media timeout, 4 minutes left to go in the game, it was a 11 or 12-point game. We had to foul and come down and try to throw up some threes. I mean, we could hold the ball and say, hey, we lost by 12, or, you know, continue to fight and try to win the game and do the best we could. And so, you know, we had to take a couple of ill-advised, you know, long shots or whatever to try to – and foul to try to get back into the game. So, but, yeah, it was a great, great experience, something we'll never forget, that the run up in Richmond for 3 days of winning the CAA tournament was awesome. And, yeah, I mean, that was certainly a great experience.
Kind of a funny story very quickly about that game. Johnny Gardner, one of our loyal listeners and a very loyal supporter of East Carolina basketball, was there that night at the Lawrence Joel Coliseum in Winston-Salem. And he said, you guys were leaving the court, headed to the locker room after warmups. And, you know, he was understandably fired up and said, and Coach Payne was walking through the portal or tunnel there. And he said, hey, let's go get him, Coach. And that Coach Payne looked at him like he had four heads.
Yeah, they were, you know, they were so big. I mean, they were the national champion that year. And so, you know, they were really big.
Three seven-footers, right?
Yeah, they had three
seven-footers. Montrall, Salvadori.
Yeah, Montrall, Salvadori, Matt Winstrom. Serge Swicker was actually redshirted that year. He's, you know, 7'6", walking around. And I remember coming out for warmups. You know, we came out first, and they came out in two lines. And I remember kind of getting to half court where we were coming on our side of the court. They were kind of coming on their side of the court. And I led the team out of the locker room when we would come out. Because we went from shortest to tallest. So there you go. But anyway, led the team out, and we kind of get to half court and kind of bumped into them. And I remember having like two hip bones hit me on top of the head, and that one of them was Montross and one of them was Winstrom. And I looked up and I was like, man, these guys are huge. But that was one thing that made them good. I'll tell you another thing that made them good was George Lynch. George Lynch could play in that game. Anytime we'd start to make a little bit of a comeback, or we would have a chance to get in the game or come down and get a – we'd force them to miss a shot where we could come down and do something with it. If you go back and look, that offensive rebound that we just couldn't quite get secure, George Lynch got it and put it back up and in. And, you know, he might not have had 25 points in the game, but he carved a lot of people up and did a lot of things for that team. And he was one player I walked away probably most impressed with George Lynch than anybody.
No doubt. And before we wrap things up, I know this is the first time we've had you on in a while, as I mentioned, and I don't think we'd exchanged a few texts, but don't think I had seen you since back in the jungle during the baseball regional or super regional out there in the jungle parking lot. But now, what's your takeaway from the 8-5 football season, and then also maybe a thought or two as the Pirates are projected to, of course, win the American again, and will hopefully do so in baseball?
Yeah, you know, really good football season, and you know, really, you know, impressed and happy with Coach Houston and the work that he and his staff have done. Of course, Holton being the hometown, you know, hero. Holton was a young man was really pulling for. He was a guy that could have gone to other places and chose to stay, and was just really happy to see for him to get the 8-5, get the bowl win, and kind of bring us back to the place that we're used to being. And, you know, 8 wins and 9 wins and 10 wins, and giving us a chance to kind of build off of that and have that type of program. So yeah, I was really, really happy about that. My son plays football, and so there were some games I was unable to attend as many games as I normally would. He plays football over at Barton, so that was a nice drive, but there were a couple of conflicts I was unable to see as much of football as in a normal year. But yeah, was really pleased to see us get back and look for big things in the future. And of course, you know, Coach Godwin just keeps doing what he does in baseball, and really excited about that, and hope that, you know, every year, you know, was it the saying, hope springs eternal, and this could be our year and to get to Omaha. You know, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it really would. It's just a matter of time. You know, it's such a shame last year where we won game one and then had that 7-2 lead in game two. I guess it's the seventh inning. I just remember, I want to say this, after the sixth inning, a buddy of mine from it's an App State fan texted me and said, "Hey, you feeling pretty good? You feeling Omaha?" I said, "Heck no, I'm not feeling Omaha."
No.
I said, "That's not anything against our guys, because I fully believe that we could close it out. I just knew how hard those final 8 or 9 outs are to get."
And who we had to get about against. I mean,
exactly.
You know, Texas. Yeah, that's tough. No, you don't. Yeah, I'm never overconfident in any of those situations.
No way. Seen too much. Not only East Carolina, just sports in general.
Sports
not over until it's over, especially in a game of that magnitude. But before we get out of here, since you brought up Holton Ahlers in the year Holton had, I wanted to mention that tomorrow, January 14th, he'll be playing down in Orlando in the Hula Bowl, obviously during COVID. I believe that's when the Hula Bowl was moved from the islands to Orlando. It's played at the Bounce House there, FBC Mortgage Stadium on the campus of UCF. And that will be televised. I believe it's a noon kick on the CBS Sports Network. So either set your DVR if you're around the house and check out Holton Ahlers on Saturday afternoon. TJ, do you have anything else before we get out of here?
No, just hope the Pirates can get a win. Went on Sunday, and it's been good. Good to be here and visit with you. And yeah, no, I do think there'll be a lot of basketball letter winners to make it back later in February. And of course, we're trying to work on some things to get some of the guys to come back and you know, come to Minji's and come out and visit and see some people here even before that. So no, that's it. Just hoping for the Pirate basketball to keep on. Get a couple wins here and get going.
Definitely. Big one against the USF Bulls on Sunday matinee. If you're able to head out to Minji's and get your tickets, ecupirates.com, or obviously just get them at the ticket office, headed into Minji's on Sunday afternoon. But we really appreciate everyone tuning into the show. Obviously, you can follow the Sports Objective on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, and then on Instagram and TikTok. We're at the Sports Objective. Follow us and like us on Facebook, and also subscribe to our ever-growing YouTube channel, where we're now over 700 subscribers. But for former East Carolina basketball alum TJ Long, I'm Bub Rosenbaum. You've been watching and listening to the Sports Objective. Have a great weekend, everyone. And as always, go Pirates.
You've been watching.
Your crossbones up and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Come on. Yeah, 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 yeah. Welcome to the island, man. It's crazy in here. A whole sea of purple and gold waving in here. Keep a plank for the Shark Tank. Traders beware, because we got a whole bunch of rowdy sailors in here.
You're watching the Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show, and go Pirates!